Welcome to Unraveling Karma, the ninth episode in Evolutionary Astrology Podcast. My name is Tom Jacobs. I'm an evolutionary astrologer and psychic medium in Los Angeles, California. You can find me on the web at tdjacobs.com, where I offer two original natal reports, one on the true black moon Lilith and one on preparing for the great shifts that are coming that culminate at the end of the Mayan calendar in 2012. That report is called Living in the Present Tense. Today's episode, I have two listener charts for you, two questions from people who wrote in. The first one is named Crystal, and her birth data are June 15th, 1985, in Carlsbad, New Mexico, in the U.S. And Crystal asks actually a very brief question that has a very complicated answer. She writes, I have severe anxiety issues, and I'm wondering how I can move forward with them, or if I even can right now. So what I want to offer you, Crystal, is this. There, you have an emphasis in each of the water houses, 4, 8, and 12. And you have Chiron very close to the beginning of the fourth house, the IC, and then you have Pluto in the eighth house. And then you have a body, Jupiter, that's square the nodal axis in the 12th house. So each of these three is very significant as far as sources of anxiety. Because what is anxiety? Anxiety is some kind of present tense reaction, you know, to the anticipation of something negative happening. And I think karmically speaking, especially with the Pluto in Scorpio and the eighth house, we're talking about a wound to the ability to open up to people, to trust people. It's a wound to intimacy and to the way that we share sexuality with other people. But it's also, on a very basic level, just our willingness to open up to other people. So when somebody has a Pluto in the eighth house, or actually a Pluto in Scorpio, because the Scorpio is related to the eighth house, you know, there's a deep soul need to bond deeply with another, to learn to reveal the self, to learn to show exactly who you are and what you're made of, and to be as honest as possible about the self. This is one of the intentions, one of the soul's intentions with Pluto in Scorpio or the eighth house. Karmically speaking, you know, you also have this Pluto retrograde, which means that, and the way that I understand the Pluto retrograde is that there's an excess in Pluto in your karmic past, and now this retrograde energy is to point the energy inward so that you can figure out for yourself what appropriate Pluto energy is. Now, some of the keywords we can use for Pluto include power, and lots of times Pluto in the eighth house, Pluto in Scorpio, which you have both, the wounding is to some kind of abuse of power. Whether you know, you have received abuse from other people, or whether you have given it, whatever, in different lives, you've probably experienced both for various reasons under different scenarios. And there's no moral judgment here. If it turns out that you have done both, it's just the soul's journey is learning about how to have power, how to relate to other people, how to stand your own ground in intimate relationships, how to really learn how to open up and find out how to bond with people on the deepest possible level that humans can. That's the eighth house goal. That's the Scorpio goal. So that's one thing. You know, this is also opposed. There are two aspects I want to talk about with this Pluto. Pluto is opposed Venus and Taurus in the second. And then Pluto is actually also opposing Lilith, the true black moon Lilith, in late Aries in the second. And then Pluto is also in conjunct the moon. So what, you know, when we're talking about with Pluto and Venus, karmically, you've got relationships that lead you down a path that lead you to wounding. So one thing that you need to do, one thing that that I would recommend that you do, is to understand all of your relationships, why you have them, why you pick the people that you pick. You know, what's the real motivation deep inside you to have these people? Because if you're replaying unconsciously, if you're replaying karmic scenarios of wounding, that's going to lead to anxiety, because you're always going to be waiting for, you know, the hammer to strike. You're always going to be waiting for something bad to happen. So really getting inside your motivations and understanding why you're having the relationships you are, this is going to open a door for you into one level of that anxiety. Another layer of this, this Chiron in Gemini, it's in the very late in the third house. It's a little over a degree from the IC, the beginning of the fourth house. So I'd count it in the third, but I would also kind of read it in the fourth, because anything conjunct the IC from the third is very important. So this Chiron is in Gemini. And anything that's in the fourth house, especially when I'm talking about Chiron and Pluto, or when some aspect of the nodal structure, whether it's a south node itself or the north node ruler or Pluto or some kind of aspect of that, you know, some member of that little cast of players has to do with the fourth house, I always look at it as an inheritance that we get from our family. And specifically when Chiron is there or touching the IC, what's happening is there is a Chiron situation. There is a Chiron theme that's handed down through the family. And some of the different ways I've seen this play out is that, for instance, a parent will come to me, and the parent has Chiron on the fourth, and his son has Chiron on the fourth. And he will say to me, you know, we're estranged. And I will say, there's some point where, you know, what your Chironic wounding that wasn't possible to be honored by your parents, and because they carry it too. There's some kind of chironic sensitivity, some kind of woundedness that's carried out through the family. Your parents saw it in you and couldn't deal with it, so they didn't help you. They didn't support you in that healing. And so then when your kid is born, you see it the same way, and then you don't know what to do with it because you didn't have yours dealt with. And so we have this, you know, whatever the Chiron wounding is, it could be just a sensitivity in the eyes. It could be just an emotion, an ability to feel on such an immediate or deep level that it, you know, confuses people. They don't know how to react. People don't know how to deal with really deep emotions coming out and being displayed. And Chiron in the fourth, what, you know, another way of looking at it that I would offer is, there is a deep sensitivity to emotional reality. So as I talked about this Pluto in the eighth and how that has to do a lot with other people and trust and connectedness, you know, with others that you relate with this Chiron touching the fourth, there's something in your family that's passed down, a woundedness, a feeling of differentness, a feeling of isolation, a feeling of being different than everybody around them, and this is carried down. This can actually take the form of a parent who feels rejected by life, who has, you know, has an issue with that. It could be something like this, but essentially what I want to tell you is, for your own health, having energetic boundaries about what you're going to absorb from other people and saying no thank you to everybody else's pain, everybody else's suffering, is really, really important for you. Part of your anxiety, I would wager, has to do with absorbing other people's anxiety. I'll just tell you that I catch myself all the time, for instance, in traffic where I feel anxious, and naturally I don't feel anxious. Naturally, I'm actually a very calm guy. I have the sun in the second house. I'm pretty calm, pretty naturally. But when I find myself anxious in traffic, I say all energies that do not belong to me, I send back to source. And by doing that, I'm just saying no thank you to anything that isn't mine. And I think this is going to, this, you know, if you use this as a mantra, that might be really helpful for you. Just in general, this Chiron on the fourth house cusp in Gemini, the ability to pick up on other people's pain and suffering. And so for you, another answer of anxiety is going to be learning better energetic boundaries. I also offer a meditation MP3 if you or anyone else who's listening to this is interested. You can email me at tom@tdjacobs.com, and I'm happy to send you a link to download it. It's about 13 minutes in length, and it's for grounding and clearing out the aura and kind of setting this boundary. And the third thing I want to talk about is the North Node in Taurus. I didn't talk a lot about the South Node. I didn't make a whole story about the South Node and the kind of, you know, experiences you're coming from. But essentially, a South Node in Scorpio is going to be having a lot of karmic conditioning surrounding dramatic scenarios, Plutonian stuff, Scorpio stuff, power plays, power games. Intensity is probably the bottom line of Scorpio South Node experience. So you, in a, you know, separate actually from having the Pluto in Scorpio in the eighth house, you have the South Node in Scorpio. So you have a lot of karmic conditioning that has to do with, you know, responding to other people's drama, responding to other people's power games, working through that kind of stuff. With a North Node in Taurus, what you're supposed to do, you've had all the karmic experiences of dramatic stuff. What you're supposed to do is calm down. The North Node in Taurus is very often a signature. When you have a heavy Venusian signature, and Taurus is ruled by Venus, the job for us is to learn to slow down and calm down. With the Taurus side of Venus, Taurus's aim is to slow down in order to ensure survival. So with the Scorpio, you're digging below the surface to understand the truth of behind the truth of what you can see. But with the, that's what you've done in the past. You've done the fireworks. You've done the, you know, emotional acrobatics of Scorpio. And now this for you to learn to calm down, to learn to slow down is really, really important. The ruler of this North Node is Venus, also in Taurus, but in the second house, and it's conjunct Pallas. These are actually all conjunct the North Node, Venus and Pallas on the North Node. One way of looking at this is that it's a signature of creativity. Venus and Pallas both have to do with creativity. They're in Taurus, a sign of Venus, and they're both in the second house. Pallas is actually on the cusp of the third, but I'd read it on both. So one of the ways for you to do this calming down in this life in general is to express yourself creatively. Learn to orient yourself towards the sensual reality of life. Venus and Taurus with Pallas in the second house, there's this sensual invitation, which is feeling what, you know, the information that the body offers. So I said creativity, but the second house is also about values. And so for you to have relationships, which Venus signifies, that are based on your own value system, you know, South Node and Scorpio, you might have to deal with anybody who comes along and deal with a lot of emergencies in different kinds of relationships. With Venus and Taurus, you're supposed to very intentionally pick who is in your life. And when people come in and out, you know, people who you don't want in your life, it's okay to say no thanks. It's okay to say, you know, to yourself that that's actually the kind of, you know, there might be a kind of drama that comes in that is not healthy for you. And so for you to say no thank you to it is very, very important. So I hope that gives you a couple of ideas for how to work on the anxiety. And I thank you for sending in your question. And the second chart I have for you is Lindsay in Florida. Her data are May 1st, 1984 at 3:40 a.m. in Melbourne, Florida, Melbourne, Florida. And Lindsay writes, how does a woman with a strong Lilith form relationships where she is regarded as more than just one staunch, rigid archetype? Madonna slash whore, mother slash daughter, witch slash angel, all sexual roles I've played. So, coincidentally, we are going to talk a lot about Lilith, but I just want to point out, coincidentally, we have another Pluto in Scorpio in the 8th house with Lindsay. So, Lindsay, you have the true black moon Lilith in Pisces in the 1st, and it's conjunct the asteroid Pallas Athene, also Pisces in the 1st. They're about a half a degree off. This conjunction is square the nodal axis, south node in Sagittarius in the 9th, and it's also square the midheaven IC axis and the retrograde Uranus, which is sitting right on that, a couple degrees off that Sagittarius midheaven. So any question you could ask about Lilith, there's going to be, you know, obviously a lot of charge to it because it's wrapped up with a lot of your soul's journey as you live it in many different lives. So the first thing is, with Lilith in the first, you're going to be carrying Lilith energy. You're going to be carrying either, you're going to be carrying the kind of orientation to the kind of raw, unbridled sexuality. Now, you can actually stuff that down, but people will still see it. So you're carrying this. It doesn't mean, that you are or aren't unbridled sexually, though the rest of your message, indicates that you are. So you're carrying Lilith in your person. You're carrying it in your body. You're going to be carrying around Lilith to show everybody. Whether or not you bring it out or not, people are going to be able to see it. And you obviously, from your message, you show it. You don't have a problem with showing it. You have a problem with some of the reactions that you get to it. You also wrote in a longer paragraph that that men aren't really sure how to react to it. At first, it's great that you're open and you don't have boundaries sexually, but then what ends up happening is they're either afraid of you or they're not really sure what to do with you. So what you need to understand is, let's start with this having to do with the nodal structure, because square the south node indicates. Squares to the nodes indicate unresolved issues from the karmic past. So all of the questions that you're asking are, about Lilith, about sexuality, about equality, about being, taken for who you are and met where you are, being met halfway and having relationships that are honest and with integrity. These are karmic issues for you. These are unresolved issues from other lives as well as this life. This life is, in one level, a replaying of the confusion and difficulty and exasperation from other lives. So if you think about it, that chances are some of these other lives are going to be played out in repressive cultures. We reincarnate in all different kinds of cultures, in all different kinds of times, for all different kinds of reasons. But just given what's been happening on Earth for the last few thousand years, with kind of being afraid of our natural sexuality, you can probably, it's probably safe to bet that you have found yourself in those kinds of cultures. So now, 2009 U.S., could be thought to be a very different kind of place. And in some ways it is, because there seem to be these doorways opening, these little pockets that are open for people to have express the kind of individuality that they really feel. Yet you're dealing with a social fabric that is still stuck in Piscean age fear. In the Aquarian age, which is where we're headed very soon, if we're not already technically there, everybody's individual expression is each person's responsibility. And this is, to be healthy and to be happy, we have to figure out exactly who we are and be willing to show it. In the Piscean age, we're talking about a kind of a top-down approach where you're supposed to take direction from the people who are higher on the social food chain. And with regard to Lilith and sexuality, you're operating in a culture where people don't know what to do with it. So this is the part that you already know. Because it's obvious, because it's everywhere, because you're carrying this energy and these reactions to you are ever present. They're everywhere. So what you need to do is to let go. You need to let go of what it means, what part of you thinks it means about you when other people react negatively. Part of a woman who has Lilith in the first, who's willing to express it, who's willing to, have a certain kind of relationship and kind of, expression of her sexuality and in an honest expression of her sexuality. She, in this time, in this place, is naturally going to encounter a lot of resistance, a lot of fear. These different archetypes, the Madonna whore, mother daughter, witch angel, what you're dealing with in the microcosm of a one-on-one relationship with a man is the cultural inheritance that each of you is dealing with. I mean, you're dealing with his training to want somebody who's tame. Because this gets into Adam and Eve and the work that I do on those archetypes, Adam, Eve, Lilith, and Lucifer, about how Adam and Eve are the appropriate versions of masculinity and femininity that we're supposed to have. But each of us knows that we're also Lucifer and Lilith, who are actually just rebellious and not controllable. The Judeo-Christian religions have instructed us to deny our true natures in order to be good members of society. In the talks that I offer on my site, one on Lilith and one on Lucifer kind of retells the story and goes through the archetypal stages of each. Those talks that I offer on my site, that really gets into this, and I'd encourage you to listen to those. But you're dealing with other people's training to deny or to be afraid of their own raw sexuality. So for you to be picky about who you're with is really important. For you to be, now I know I can almost kind of hear you saying back to me, yeah, well, you don't know until you have this intense experience and then they flip out. So there's got to be a way for you to improve your radar some, but also let go of what you think it means about you or what it means in general when particular men can't handle it, can't handle being with you when you're being honest. You know, on all those different levels, because there are men who can handle that. I had a friend who said to me, who's kind of coming up against the same kind of thing, who said to me, yeah, well, where are these men who can handle being with a woman who's that honest about who she is on those levels? And she said, you know, do I have to wait around, or, you know, are they ever going to be here? And I said, they're here, but some of them actually don't know who they are. Some of them don't know that they're willing to meet a woman that way. Some of them wake up and find out when they're with women who kind of open in their sexuality on those levels. So job number one for you is going to be to let go of what it means. Let go of the charge that you have, the anger that you have, that people aren't going to meet you or people are going to be afraid of you. You're manifesting that experience in part because you're afraid of it, because you don't want it to happen. You know, when you hold something in your consciousness that you truly don't want to happen, that's what's going to happen. So if you have a charge about not being accepted, about not being met, about not being appreciated, about not being having someone be with you in a certain way, you're going to repeat that scenario. That's part of your Pluto and Scorpio in the eighth house. A woman who feels the archetype of Lilith strongly, who carries it around, has to be unapologetic about who she is. In this time and place, that does, you know, come up against some social walls. But there are many, many individuals who will want to play with you on that level. You're recreating those experiences because of the pain of the karmic past. The anger associated with Lilith could be a trap that you could find yourself in. And it's understanding that, you know, whether you may have experienced this in the past or you might experience it later based on how much anger builds up. But, you know, there's a stereotype of Lilith having to do with revenge and using sexuality as power in order to hurt men in general or specific men. And if you, the anger that anybody has about being threatened, actually hurt, raped, this kind of thing, from really showing who you are. This is part of your Pluto in the eighth. The anger is what drives our contemporary understanding of Lilith. And yet, is the way that I work with the archetypes, anger is the fifth of nine stages. And we have to learn how to get beyond it. Not nine archetypal stages where people can find themselves. We have to learn to get beyond it. The anger isn't going to do anybody any good. So let go of what it means, what you think it means about you, what you think it means about men, what you think it means about any of the particular men that you've been with who can't meet you as an equal. One of your big things that you're trying to get done in this life is to figure out the appropriate level of self-expression. This Lilith in the first house, square the nodes. You're trying to find the appropriate level of self-expression. Along the way, you're going to go too far and you're going to go not far enough. That's just the nature of having squares to the nodes for any of us. So for you to pick and choose where that energy comes out, which is actually, like I said, being more selective about who these people are. There are many ways to test the waters, to find out who people are before we really fully open up to them. Not as in teasing and testing, but getting to know people in certain ways, bringing up Lilith-inspired topics, talking about this kind of stuff to find out where people are. And a man who has been, you know, told that he's supposed to be Adam, which is a good, upstanding member of society, and every man in Judeo-Christian cultures, in societies shaped by Judeo-Christian monotheistic religions, I should say monotheistic religions and not even Judeo-Christian. Every man has been exposed to this idea that there is a version of upstanding man that he needs to be. And yet he also knows that he has this rebellious, this naysayer, this bad boy. You know, we all have each of these parts. So what you're finding is men want to be in that place they have been told is dangerous, but then yes, they're afraid to find it out. There's actually a work by a teacher and writer named David Deida. The last name is Deida, and he talks about how the natural the natural state of woman. He gives this analogy of being of a storm, of the weather, of that femininity is the weather, and masculinity is the single consciousness that's willing to stand up in the middle of the storm no matter what. And so when we're talking about Lilith and you opening up sexually, you're bringing a storm, and these individuals are not sure how to do it. But like I said, there are tons of people who will, but you have to let go of what you think it means about you, that it hasn't happened, or that it goes wrong, or that, why abusive scenarios might come up. This is karmic healing for you. So I hope that opens some doors for you and puts you in touch with some ideas to help figure that out. And thank you for writing. So this is the end of episode 9 of Unraveling Karma. Again, my name is Tom Jacobs, an evolutionary astrologer and psychic medium in Los Angeles, and you can find me on the web at tdjacobs.com. And if you have a question that you'd like me to address in a future episode, you can write me at karma@tdjacobs.com. Bye-bye.